Chapter 17. One Word. Drusha turned away. He leant on the platform's rail and stared at the slowly turning cog systems of the great machine. He didn't want to be sick. He was afraid that if he started, he wouldn't be able to stop.
"That was barbaric," he said quietly.
"It was necessary," replied Eisenhorn, his breathing ragged and rapid. "And Jaff was a heretic. A murderer. A traitor to me." Drusha turned around slowly. Eisenhorn was crouching over Jaff's steaming remains.
"No one deserves that," Drusha said.
"You have lived a very sheltered life, Magos," said Eisenhorn. "This galaxy is more cruel and dangerous than you can imagine. When you fight against it, you cannot afford to be sentimental or squeamish."
"I know about you," said Drusha.
"I resent your interruption," said Eisenhorn. "I was interrogating, at great cost to myself. There were a few seconds left. You jumped in with your question."
"I needed to know about Germaine."
"You are fond of the Marshal," said Eisenhorn. "I understand. You must understand she is an insignificant part of this. So are you, and so am I. Your sentiment betrays you. A life or two, 100, 1,000, they are collateral in this war."
"I am quite content to remain a creature of sentiment for the rest of my life," replied Drusha. "I am very glad I'm not like you. I told you. I know about you." "You chose to ignore the remark."
Eisenhorn rose to face him. He looked drawn and deathly pale.
"What is it you think you know, Magos?"
"You are no inquisitor," said Drusha. "Perhaps once, but not now. You are a rogue, disavowed by your own kind. Whatever war you are waging, whatever quest you're on, it's yours alone. You are not sanctioned. There is no official support."
"There is truth in that," said Eisenhorn. "But it only serves to demonstrate that the Holy Orders don't appreciate the extremity or scale of this threat." "I have warned them. They have ignored the warning. Therefore, I must act alone, or no one will stand against it."
"But it bothers you," said Drusha. "You lied. You and Vorier, you maintain the pretense that you are of the Ordos, that you still have that authority. You use that lie to recruit me and to drum up the support of Max and her deputies."
"The rosette of the Inquisition has clout," said Eisenhorn. "It has influence. You would not have assisted me otherwise. Or it would have taken a great deal more persuasion. The guise of Inquisitor is expedient in my work."
"So, it's a useful lie. That's all you have to say on the matter?"
"No, actually."
Eisenhorn looked at him. There was a fierce gleam in his eyes.
"I am an Inquisitor. It has been my life. I know I am true in the defense of the Golden Throne. If the echelons of the Inquisition and the other august institutions of the Imperium choose, in their ignorance, to deem me otherwise, then it is they who are wrong, not me."
"One might describe that as a terrifying level of self-delusion, sir," said Drusha.
"You can describe it however you like, Magos,"
Eisenhorn replied. He glanced over his shoulder.
"Someone's coming," he whispered. "A psychotic event like this, and Jaff's screams, will not have gone unnoticed."
Drusha followed Eisenhorn across the platform. He didn't really want to, but he wanted to stay put even less. He glanced back at Jaff's remains.
"Do we just leave her there?"
"Hurry,"
Eisenhorn replied. They moved down some steps to the next platform stage and hid in the shadows of one of the great cogs. From concealment, they could see the stage they had just left. Eisenhorn reached into his coat and drew a large and ornate auto pistol. It looked the size of a standard carbine to Drusha.
"What do we..."
Drusha began.
"Remain silent."
A man appeared on the platform above. It was the tall man with florid tattoos that Drusha had seen before. He hurried to Jaff's body, recoiled in disgust, then anxiously began to look around, a las pistol raised.
"Blake!" he called.
The heavy man appeared a moment later, out of breath.
"What did you find? What was that cry?"
he asked. "Jeff's done for."
"Damn!"
the fat man gasped, seeing the corpse.
"Eisenhorn's handiwork," replied the tattooed man. "He's here, and he's loose."
"What did he do to her?"
the fat man asked, tilting his head in ghastly fascination as he stared at Jaff's body.
"Who cares, Blake? We have to find him before he does worse."
"Streakow's already hunting,"
said Blake, running a pudgy hand through his thin grey hair. He hefted up the heavy combat las he was carrying.
"Streakow's efficient, but she'll need help," replied the tattooed man. "This bastard is as dangerous as his reputation suggests. Go up to the cage. Tell Gobleka what's happened."
"He'll be furious, Da Vinch."
"Of course he will. So tell him gently."
Da Vinch, the tattooed man, glanced at his portly colleague.
"Go on."
"Where are you going?"
Blake asked.
"I'll check down from here," said Da Vinch. "Right down to the cellar. I want to see if Jeff put that Magos fool in a cage before this happened to her. Otherwise, we've got two interlopers loose. And tell Gobleka someone needs to get outside. There's the other loose end, the Betancourt woman. She needs to be tidied up too."
Blake nodded. He walked away and began to climb the steps.
"Hurry!"
Da Vinch shouted after him.
"Gobleka may even want to request an outside assist to get this squared away."
Blake disappeared out of sight. Da Vinch had drawn both pistols. He circled the platform and began to move towards the steps close to Eisenhorn and Drusha. Eisenhorn placed a hand on Drusha's arm. Drusha felt an uncomfortable, psychanic tap. The tattooed man suddenly looked around, as if he'd heard someone call his name. He made off in the opposite direction and quickly vanished behind the gears of the great machine.
"You could have shot him," said Drusha quietly.
"I could," said Eisenhorn. "But I don't want to bring the whole place down on us. We are the last two, Drusha. Silence and shadows are our friends."
"Our friends? While we do what, exactly?"
"He mentioned Sark and Gobleka."
"I've seen them both," said Drusha. "A long way above us, there's a cage on a gantry. A psychometric monitor. Is that the right term? Magos Sark is in it. Caged like an animal. He's become the, I don't know, focus of this machine. He's part of it. It's working because of him."
"So Jaff said."
"But his mind is gone," said Drusha. "He's very damaged. This Gobleka fellow, he seems to be the one running the operation now."
"Goran Gobleka is an expert fixer. The Cognite value his skills. But Sark is the primary target. We have to stop him. Stop this loom manufacturing any more grails for the King in Yellow."
"I didn't understand any of what Jaff told you," said Drusha. "What are they trying to achieve?"
"I don't expect you to understand, Magos,"
Eisenhorn replied.
"Frankly, I don't want you to understand. But so you grasp the vital nature of this, the Cognite, through the King in Yellow, are working to bring down the Imperium. I believe their goal is no less than the assassination of the Emperor. So, when we are done here, I will go to the Angelus subsector, to Sancour, and I will find this place called Queen Mab, and there I will hunt down and destroy the King in Yellow. But first, this place must be ended, so it can construct no more monsters to serve his scheme."
Drusha nodded.
"Then let's get Max and—"
"She's not a priority," said Eisenhorn.
"She's alive, Eisenhorn."
"And I'm sorry for that. But she is not the priority here, Magos."
"We can't just leave her—"
"We can."
"No," said Drusha. "I can't."
"Magos, do you still not understand the importance of—"
"I do," interrupted Drusha firmly. "But as you took pains to point out, I am a creature of sentiment. I won't leave my friend to die. You can help me, or you can get on with waging your private war. I'm going to the cellars. I think that's where she may be. If you come, we can get it done quickly. Then we can both help you deal with Sark."
"There isn't time," said Eisenhorn.
"Then off you go, and good luck to you," said Drusha.
Eisenhorn glared at him.
"Don't try and pull rank," said Drusha. "You're not an inquisitor, and I'm not one of your lackeys."
"You are a very aggravating man, Magos,"
said Eisenhorn.
"One of my few real skills." Tell me, did you suspect Jaff?
I suspect everyone,
said Eisenhorn. Hence the levels of secrecy and confidence you exhibited at Helter, telling no one anything, sharing nothing. You don't trust anyone, do you?
I can't afford to, Magos.
I pity you, said Drusha.
I trust those I've known a long time,
said Eisenhorn quietly.
Medea. Nail.
He fell silent as he spoke the name. Then he glanced back at Drusha.
I was sure there was a spy in my company, he said, even before I arrived on Gershom. That is why I kept things classified. I thought it was Vorier.
Vorier? Really?
He was interrogator to Inquisitor Syriac. He is genuinely an officer of the Ordos. He came to me 2 years ago, saying that he wished to join me, that he believed in my cause, and felt that the Ordos were blind to the real threat. In effect, he went rogue and joined me.
But you didn't trust him?
Vorier is very able and was a decent addition to my party. But no, I never trusted him. I believed him to be a double agent, claiming to be a renegade, but sent by the Ordos to infiltrate my operation.
Yet you kept him close, asked Drusha. You didn't kill him just in case?
Vorier was useful, and he's a good man, replied Eisenhorn. I was aware of his true loyalties, so I treated him warily. But I hoped. I hoped that if I let him work with me, he might see the truth. He might become convinced of the danger, that the threat was genuine.
And side with you for real? Drusha paused. No, you wanted more than that, didn't you? You hoped that he would report to his masters in the Ordos and convince them your cause was true. Convince them that you were no rogue. He was your way back in, your chance to be accepted back into the folds of the Inquisition.
You are astute.
It's so ironic, sir, said Drusha. Ironic to the point of comedy. You suspect everyone. You believe there's a spy in your midst. You think it's Vorier, perhaps correctly, but you use him for your own ends, to rebuild the bridges you burned with the Inquisition. And then the real spy turns out to be Jaff. Not just an agent of your ex-masters, but worse, an agent of your true enemy.
She hid it well. That's what the Cognite do.
You hate that the Ordos cast you out, don't you? Asked Drusha. You hate the fact they declared you a heretic.
I hate the fact that the Ordos are blind and stubborn, replied Eisenhorn. I could achieve a great deal more, a great deal faster, if I had their blessing, their cooperation, and their not inconsiderable support.
Or you have no friends and you don't like it, said Drusha.
Pure sentiment, Eisenhorn responded.
Well, I have a friend, and I'm going to help her.
This is a dangerous location, Magos, and you are no combatant. You don't have the skill set to do her any good.
So? Help me, said Drusha.
No, said Eisenhorn. Max is not a priority.
That there, sir, is why you don't have any friends, said Drusha. He turned away. I'll go do whatever I can. You go do what you need to do. I hope this isn't goodbye, but I think it probably is. And so I wish you well in your efforts.
He walked down the platform and began to descend the stairs. Eisenhorn stood and watched him for a while, then turned, limping painfully, and disappeared in the opposite direction. Drusha stopped and looked back. Eisenhorn was gone.
Throne, he muttered to himself.
He had been quite sure Eisenhorn was going to change his mind and come after him. The old bastard really was as cold as stone. And now Drusha was alone. He had no clue what he was going to do or how he could achieve it. Eisenhorn had been right. Valentin Drusha was no fighter. He wasn't going to last a second against any of Goblika's ruthless minions. He was way out of his depth. He had been since the moment Harlan Nail had hammered on his front door. He continued down the steps. For what little good it might do, he took the gun out of his coat pocket and clutched it tightly. It took a while to reach the base levels of the tower. Longer, in fact, than Drusha fancied it should have taken, as if the tower were much taller than any real tower could be, as if its dimensions stretched down into impossible depths. He moved slowly, hugging the shadows, flinching every time a metal step or platform panel creaked under him. The constant movement and whirring of the huge loom's gears around him kept making him start. He jumped at every shifting machine part, imagining each motion to be the movement of some cognate henchman stalking him. Finally, he climbed down through the huge, wrought-iron girder frame that supported the weight of the loom. The frame was as substantial as a major road bridge, and its fabric was built into the walls of the tower. Further high-tension steel cables were cross-anchored around the frame to support the immense weight. Looking down from a catwalk that ran under the heavy frame, Drusha saw a platform built out from the tower wall in the void beneath. It was large, ragged and uneven, a patchwork of steel plates and flakboarding. It looked like a part of the hull skin of an old ship that had been peeled away and repurposed as flooring. Where it extended out over the void, it sagged and became more frayed, its feathered edge dangling above the darkness below. Below it, the tower walls continued down into the dark still further, but Drusha could see a glint in the blackness that suggested the very base of the tower was filled with promethium or some other dark, viscous fluid. Beneath the level of the great iron frame, everything was slightly sheened with oil, every surface tacky with a fine brown stain. The loom had run, so Jaff had said, for centuries. Precision engineering required lubricant to keep it moving smoothly. Drusha imagined the constant tending and attention the loom above him had received over the years, the regular application of lubricant and grease to the gears and cogs. Movement and gravity combined to gently remove the lubricant from the great machine, and this is where the residue ended up, draining into a sump in the tower's base, a deep well of pooling waste oil. There was a row of cages on the ragged platform. They looked like the metal box cage that had contained Sark. Six cages placed against the tower wall. Nearby was a small laboratory station, an old auto-medicare unit, and some metal storage bins. The whole area was gloomy, lit only by dozens of fat candles ranged around the platform and the work area. It looked uncomfortably like a shrine, like a place of unwholesome ritual. By the flickering yellow light of the candles, Drusha could see that two of the cages were occupied. He moved around for a better look. A rough metal staircase ran down from the catwalk to the edge of the platform. The hunched figure in one of the cages was Jermaine Max. A crumpled body lay in the cage beside her. The floors of the other cages were littered with blackened human bones. Drusha crept to the head of the stairs. There appeared to be no one else around. His heart racing, he climbed down the stairs. Max looked up and saw him as he stepped onto the platform. She lurched to the front bars of the cage and peered out at him.
"Valentin? Oh, holy throne, Valentin!"
He smiled at her and put his finger to his lips. The pistol was still in his hand. He put it in his pocket and shushed her properly.
"Keep your voice down, Jermaine," he hissed.
He hurried over to her cage. She looked up at him with wild eyes. She was filthy, and the side of her face was swollen and badly bruised. He knelt down and looked in at her. She grabbed his hand through the bars.
"What did they do to you?" he asked.
"Hit me," she said. "Club me with a rifle stock. I'm all right. Don't look so worried, Valentin. Just get me out of here."
He let go of her hand and started to examine the cage. There was plainly a door, but there was no lock, no keyhole. He tried to pull the door open.
"I've tried that," she said sarcastically. "I'm sure you have." "He closed it with a word," she said.
"Who did?"
"The one who clubbed me. Big bastard. Black hair, freaky violet eyes."
"Goblika," said Drusha.
"Well, when I get out of here, he's a dead man," she said. "He killed Garifa and Edda."
"Both of them?" asked Drusha.
"Cold blood. I had surrendered, and he just..."
Her voice trailed off.
"Hadid deserved a better end than that," she said miserably. "They both did."
"What do you mean he closed it with a word?"
asked Drusha, trying the cage door again.
"I came to as he was putting me in here," she said. "He swung the door shut, then said a word, and it was locked fast."
"Enuncia,"
said a hoarse voice from the next cage. Drusha looked up. The other prisoner was Vorier. He was a mess. His throat and forehead were black with bruises, and his eyes were halfway swollen shut. The interrogator tried to struggle into a sitting position, but he was clearly in agony.
"They used enuncia,"
Vorier said. It sounded like his throat was full of blood. Do you remember the word he used? Drusha asked Max. She shook her head.
It wasn't really a word, she said. I didn't understand it.
Do you know anything of Anuncia that might help us, Vorier? Drusha asked.
I would have used it already if I did,
Vorier replied.
Eisenhorn keeps that knowledge to himself.
How are you hurt?
Broken arm, smashed hand,
replied Vorier. He gestured to his face and throat with his left hand.
And this?
Where is everyone else?
Max asked Drusha urgently. Nail's dead, said Drusha. Jaff, too. She was the one who betrayed us.
Jaff?
Vorier said. Drusha looked over at Vorier. She was one of them, sir, Drusha said. A cognite spy in your midst. She was the one who sicked that thing on us in Helter Fortress.
I can't believe it,
Max whispered, rocking back in amazement. Vorier was clearly shaken by the idea.
Audler,
he whispered, uncomprehending.
She was cognite,
said Drusha.
But she... We trusted her,
said Vorier.
Trust seems to be a real issue with you people, said Drusha. Anyway, she's gone now. Eisenhorn, he dealt with her.
Eisenhorn's alive,
asked Vorier.
Yes. Why isn't he with you?
Asked Max.
He had better things to do,
said Drusha. He ran his fingers along the door edge again.
What do you mean?
She asked. Drusha glanced at Vorier.
Priorities. Isn't that right, interrogator?
Drusha asked.
Stopping Sark, stopping all of this. It's what matters to him. We're all expendable.
Screw him, snapped Max.
It's unfortunate, said Vorier, but I understand. This heresy must be brought to an end. We are of less consequence.
Ah, yes, said Drusha sarcastically. Duty.
We are sworn to our duty, sir,
said Vorier.
Even renegades and rogues? Asked Drusha. I know all about him, Vorier.
And he knows all about you.
What do you mean, Magos?
Asked Vorier.
That you joined his rogue band to watch him. That you affect sympathy to his cause, yet all the while you operate at the bidding of your Ordo masters.
He suspected you from the start.
That's not true,
said Vorier.
By all means deny it, Vorier. It's probably safer. But he knows what you are. And he keeps you close because he hopes you will learn and see for yourself the legitimacy of his work, and vouch for him to your masters.
You're talking rubbish, growled Vorier.
Look where you are, Vorier, said Drusha. In a cage, in a cognite stronghold, in, what's the word, extimate space?
The immaterium loom hums, sir, making weapons called grails to form an army that the cognite's king in yellow will unleash against Terra.
Look at the evidence and tell me this is not a battle that the Holy Ordo should be fighting. They should listen to Eisenhorn. They should help him, support him, not declare him a heretic.
Vorier didn't reply.
Where are you getting this from, Valentin?
Max asked, wide-eyed. Drusha shrugged.
From the lips of Eisenhorn himself, he replied.
And from the mouth of that traitor Jaff. But it doesn't matter, Germain. It's not business for ordinary people like you and me. It is way above us. It's part of a greater, darker cosmos that we are barely aware of in our day-to-day lives. So I'm just going to get you out of here, and then we can go somewhere far away and forget all about it.
How?
She asked.
How what? How are you going to get me out of here? She asked.
That, he conceded, is a problem.
This damn door won't budge, and I don't know any magic word to open it.
Drusha sat back and thought. He got up and wandered across to the workstation. It was cluttered with dirty surgical equipment and glass sample tubes he was quite certain he didn't want to touch. He looked around for a tool or instrument he could use to lever the door open. As he searched, his movement wafted the flames of the fat candles dotted around the workspace. There was nothing usable in any of the drawers. He checked the storage bins. Surely some tools. A crowbar. Nothing. Just junk and more old Medicaid supplies.
Wait, he said suddenly. Wait, wait, wait. What?
Asked Max. She and Vorier stared at Drusha as he hurried back to them. Drusha pulled the gun out of his pocket and looked at it.
Custom bullets, he said. That's what poor Nail said. Custom bullets, like the one he used to finish that undead thing.
etched by Eisenhorn himself, like amulets, to break this magic.
He aimed the weapon at the doorframe.
Whoa, whoa!
Max cried in alarm.
What?
Asked Drusha.
I know I'm not very good with guns, but... I don't care what that thing's loaded with,
said Max.
You're aiming point-blank at cast iron, Valentin. It'll ricochet, or you'll miss the bars and hit me.
The Marshal's right, said Vorier. That's not going to work.
I suppose not, said Drusha.
He laughed sadly.
I was almost feeling heroic for a second there.
He paused, then turned the gun around in his hand and fumbled with it until he managed to eject the clip.
What are you doing? Asked Max.
Drusha slid the top bullet out into his palm. He tucked the gun and the clip away in his coat pocket and held the bullet up to the light.
There's a word etched on it, all right,
he said, squinting at it.
Throne knows what it is. I've never seen anything like it.
So?
Asked Max.
I need to...
Drusha said, thinking.
I need to make a cast, or...
Clutching the bullet, he went back to the workstation and carefully picked up one of the candles. Its flame guttered and twitched. Wax dripped off its base and dribbled down his fingers. He used an old glass specimen slide to scrape up hot, soft wax from the desktop. He went back to the cages quickly and began to shape a lump of soft wax on the doorframe, roughly where a lock would have been.
What are you doing?
Asked Max.
Concentrating, said Drusha as he worked. Damn, this stuff is surprisingly hard to work with. There. Now what?
Asked Max.
Just let it cool for a second, he said. Talk to me.
What?
While we wait, he said, smiling. I'm scared out of my wits here, Germaine. Talk to me. Tell me something.
Like what?
I don't know. Something. Something from the old days that was good.
I still think about the old days, you know.
I think about you. I was a useless husband.
I knew exactly what you were when I married you, she said.
So you should have known better, he laughed.
She managed a smile.
We both should, Valentin, she said.
You are an extraordinary man, Valentin.
A magus biologus. Your life is driven by your work,
as is mine.
We both should have known better.
We shouldn't have been such damn optimists.
Optimists or romantics? He asked.
Both, she admitted.
When did we stop being optimists, Germaine? He asked.
About 15 years ago, in Tycho City, she said, smiling.
It's a shame, he said.
I think I should have made more of a life. Made time for things. Been more than a magos. I think we should be optimists again.
Do you? She asked.
Yes,
he nodded.
Because then there's a better chance of this working.
He bent down and tested the wax blob.
Let's see now, he said.
He took out the bullet, lined up the word etched on its case, and gently pressed it into the wax. When he took the bullet away, a mirror print of the inhuman word was impressed in the blob.
Now what?
Max asked. Drusha tried the cage door. It was still locked fast.
We wait, he said. It may take a moment for the charm to take effect.
You're just making this up as you go along, aren't you?
Said Max.
Story of my life, he replied. All made up as it goes along.
Preposterous and unlikely.
Like one of poor Hadid Garafar's fairy tales.
Everything's felt like that, especially since you came to the Bone Coast to find me. Fantastical and unnatural, and following a set of rules no one has bothered to explain to me.
It could work, said Vorier.
He had pulled himself up close to the bars of his cage to watch.
The charm marking. It could break the wordlock. Enuncia conflicting with enuncia.
Well, let's hope so, said Drusha.
Max rattled the cage door.
It doesn't seem to be, she said.
He could hear her rising tension.
Just be patient, Germaine. Give it a moment.
Easy for you to say, she snapped.
You're not in here.
Tell me about Trueheart,
he said, trying to distract her.
What? Did you wear it specially, or
do you always wear it?
Drusha asked.
I bought you that bottle years ago.
If you used it regularly, it wouldn't have lasted.
Do you keep buying it?
To remind myself of you.
You wish.
So you wore it specially?
She shrugged.
It was in a drawer.
I just thought
it would help you convince me, said Drusha quietly, if you smelled the way I remembered you.
It would make me feel like you still cared.
Make me believe it was more than an official visit.
Max sighed.
I'm sorry, she said.
Don't be. It was clever. You were just doing your job. Subliminal persuasion. No, she said. I'm sorry I put it on. I mean, that's why I put it on. To put you at ease. To remind you of a time when we were close. But I'm sorry I did it.
Why?
He asked. She looked at him through the bars. Because it reminded me of a time when we were close, too, she said. Drusha reached his hand in through the bars, and she took it. It's going to be all right, Germain, he said. You and me, side by side. Insane adventures. Which you always hated. I just think of them fondly in hindsight, he said. They were high jinks compared to this. It isn't working, she said. The reassurance, the wax charm, she replied. She let go of his hand and shook at the cage door again. Just be patient, he said.
There's no time for patience, Magos, said Vorier sharply.
Drusha looked around. The woman with the cropped red hair was coming down the steps onto the platform. She stared at him, smiled, and drew her sidearm.